A Thanksgiving Day sermon preached by Reverend Richard A. Rem at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan on November 26, 1998, entitled Gratitude, Generosity, and the Good Life. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 116, verse 12, and Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
What a wonderful day it is. And I don't quite know how to begin because my opening illustration is shot. The stock market went up over 200 points on Monday, and it set a record. And that really blew my opening illustration because my text says that we ought not to set our hearts on certain riches. And so I was going to point to the stock market as an instance of the volatility and instability of riches and of wealth. And then, of course, it goes up again. It is up 20% plus the first 6 months of the year, and then it crashes. We lose all the gain and a little bit more. And we just get accustomed to that and lick our wounds, and bang, it's back up there again. Of course, I decided to use the illustration anyway because I managed to find an article in the business section that said that the exuberant orgy of buying on Monday was falsely based on some huge corporate mergers and some recent cuts in the interest rate. And those two combined don't justify the exuberance of the market. It was inflated before and it's inflated now. So get ready to crash again. The stock market is a particularly good illustration of the fact that one sets one's heart on wealth and riches to one's peril. As a matter of fact, we all know that, but maybe Thanksgiving is a good time to be reminded of it again. Of course, I'm playing with you a little bit, because I don't understand the global economy, and I don't know the mysteries. I have no esoteric wisdom about the stock market. Only economists dare make prognostications and predictions about that, and we know they don't know. I'm really playing with you a little bit because you didn't come to a Thanksgiving service in order to hear a lecture on the stock market or economics. But I do have a serious intent, and that is to call to our attention the fact that we in this present culture are being shaped into economic consumers. We are being shaped into economic objects. The Christmas season is upon us, like 2 weeks ago. We used to have the decency to wait until Thanksgiving at least. But the poor turkeys hardly have a chance because Santa Claus is ubiquitous in his presence on the television tube already. And I have become aware in the last couple of seasons particularly, I don't know when it began, I don't know if it's been exacerbated in the recent past, but at least I have become aware of the fact that the television news broadcasts seem intent upon informing me about how the retail market is doing in light of the Christmas buying spree. There are predictions about whether or not this season it will go up by 3% or 5%. And then what they will be doing from now on is telling us, they'll be documenting, is it up, is it down? They'll almost create within us a kind of tension and anxiety as we await the latest numbers, because it seems as though the retail buying spree at the end of the year is determinative of our human well-being. I sometime am going to grab a ketchup bottle and throw it through the television screen when Mike Jensen is on there and the TV and NBC Evening News. Now, I think Mike Jensen's a nice guy, and all I would do is ruin my TV screen, but I am becoming frustrated with the fact that out there, the media, the news people, seem to think that I want to know just exactly what is happening in the retail market, as though that has something to do with my humanity, with civility, with humane existence. What is happening very subtly and not so subtly is that all of us are being drawn into this nail-biting experience to see whether or not the economy will top last year, whether the gross national product will increase. And it does something to us. It's dehumanizing. It's forcing a focus which doesn't deserve the intensity of that attention. And I don't quite know what to do about it. I know this. I'm watching less television. How many minutes of every hour is given over to advertising? We are being created as a consumer-driven society. We are Madison Avenue-driven to desire and seek for all sorts of things that we don't really need. I remember the story of the simple Texas cowboy who was taken into Dallas, into the huge Coliseum of Neiman Marcus, taken through all of its floors and all of its departments, and then thinking that he would really be impressed, the person asked him afterwards, "Well, what do you think?" And he said, "Well, I've never seen in all my life so many things I didn't need." Now, let me qualify. I cherish the good life. Poverty is no blessing, and prosperity is no sin. And I am not about to give you typical preacher cant that puts down business and denigrates prosperity and wealth. We live in a cultural period, a social cultural period, for which we can genuinely give thanks. What a time to be alive. What a time to live. What an opportunity for the utilization of the vast resources of creation and the expression of, it seems, that limitless human creativity. This is a good time to be alive, and I enjoy it a great deal. And the more of it, the better. We live in a time when there are voices raised about our booming economy. There are serious questions to be raised about the exploitation of resources, the fouling of the environment and all that sort of thing. But I hear voices raised that I want to say, you know, we can't go home. We will not go home. You will not reverse that developing, unfolding human drama which involves global economy, multinational corporations, international trade agreements, all of that, a world market of a globe that is becoming smaller and smaller and more interconnected. I don't think it does any good to decry that and to somehow or other try to reverse what seems to me such an inevitable tide that is impossible to go home. We need rather to apply our reason, our minds, our hearts. We need to bring in ethical considerations and do our best to bring about the most humane possible world, which is indeed exploding and developing. We must go with it in order to bring to it that note of humaneness and civility and decency and compassion. But I do want to say this morning, hear that qualification. This is not typical pulpit talk. But I do want to say this morning that we need to be careful for our souls, because we can be so caught up, so mesmerized by this ongoing explosion, this pressure upon us to become consumers, this psychology that makes us think that somehow or other it is critical to our humanity to know what the recent retail figures are. We can lose our soul, and we'll lose our joy, and we'll lose our peace, because it is true that all sorts of exciting success and prosperity in that dimension of our lives, which is not to be put down, will never satisfy us. If once we get caught in the syndrome, there will never be enough. And even if we get saturated and satiated, we'll not really have the inner peace which we want. So we thank God for the good life that we have. And we do take it for granted. We are spoiled. Recently in the windstorm, we were without power for 65 hours, and then one learns how dependent one is. And when Nancy would start to grumble, I would say, think Honduras. It's a nasty preacher's trick. You never let anybody just complain. You always make them feel guilty about it. I've been at this business a long time. But I realize how dependent we are and how interdependent we are. But in the face of those things, it's good for us just for a moment to stop and say, what really matters? And I have a fine text for you. It is the word from the passage in Timothy in the 6th chapter, where we are instructed to set not our hope or our hearts on wealth or riches, which are qualified with the adjective uncertain. Uncertain riches. But rather on God, who giveth all things to enjoy. And I want to say, in the first place, on the basis of that statement and what I think is fundamentally true, that it is the cultivation of gratitude that is most necessary for our human well-being. And maybe Thanksgiving Day is that one time in the year when together corporately we come here and we acknowledge that we have not made ourselves, we have not created this fantastic universe, we do not uphold this amazing world in our hand, for all is gift and all is grace. The sheer gift of life, the gift of breath, the gift of awareness, of appreciation, all is gift, all is grace. And this is a moment in which I can acknowledge, and you can acknowledge, we can acknowledge together, there is no such thing as a self-made person. There is no place for boasting and human pride. Those of us who have had the greatest success must be the first to say, all is gift. Gratitude. I don't know, but that may be the most fundamental human quality that makes life good and rich. I have never known an unhappy, grateful person. On the contrary, when I know someone who is truly grateful, I know a happy person. Taking nothing for granted, asserting no rights, cognizant every moment with full awareness, all is gift, all is grace. And the text says that coming to that awareness issues in generosity, doing good, good works, sharing. The psalmist said it even better, I think. I love the Lord. That expression, an emotional outburst, comes because the psalmist had been through some deep waters, and God had saved his soul from death and his eyes from tears and his feet from falling. And he says, what can I render unto the Lord for all his bounty to me? A natural question. It's a normal kind of response from the heart and the soul that has come face to face with the goodness of God and his or her total dependence. Gratitude really felt deep down inevitably issues in, what can I do? How can I respond? What shall I render unto the Lord? And at that point, I'm going to go back to Timothy, because you know how you render unto the Lord? By doing good. By sharing. By being cognizant of the needs of another and meeting those needs. Being the instrument of God for mercy and compassion in the midst of the world. Gratitude, genuinely felt, will release generosity in a great gushing flow. And then the text says, that's the good life. Laying up a good foundation for the future, taking hold of life that is life indeed. Maybe the writer to Timothy was thinking about something beyond the pale of this life. I don't know. That's okay. But I know this. Gratitude genuinely felt issuing in generosity, flowing forth. That's the good life. That's life that is life indeed, says the text. Quite rightly, I believe. That's life. That's life living with open heart and open hand. That's life not anxious and worried, trying to protect, perpetuate, and preserve, but giving and giving and giving again, knowing therein I come closest to the good and gracious God who gives and gives and gives again. So, gratitude, the awareness that all is gift and all is grace. Issuing in generosity, and resulting in a really good life. That's the formula for Thanksgiving. God keep us from being the slaves of a consumerism that would make us an economic object. God give us awareness. Gratitude, generosity, that's life. That's real life.